This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
This thing gets beaten for the second time in the month. If you don't know the name Zabit Magomed Sharipov, take the time to learn all 20 letters because he shows more flashes of championship potential in Shanghai. UFC 218 is upon us. Will we have a new old welterweight champion? Aldo, could he do it again? We'll see. And I have a special in-studio guest co-host today. Ayman Zahabi joins me previewing UFC 218, and we will discuss all the big topics in the world of MMA this week. Hopefully you've been following along. You've been keeping up with everything. I know you fought a month ago. Have you been reading all the news, or have you taken a step back and you're trying to disassociate for a little while so you can come back stronger?
I haven't been reading all the news because I've been focusing on my life outside of the fighting. I've been just moved into a condo, just got married, and doing a lot of renovations. That's pretty much taking most of my time. Still going to the gym and training once a day as well. And I did watch the main card yesterday that happened in Shanghai, and I was very impressed with Zabit's fight. You know, he showed like a lot of potential to become not only a champion at featherweight, but to have a reign like Jose Aldo or somebody from that standard. You know what I mean? And I feel like his facets, like wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and striking, are all high class, world class. And he can finish the fight in any of those dimensions, which is incredible. You don't see that very often, especially in MMA. You know, usually a guy has one specialty and he funnels the fight to that. And now with this guy, Zabit, he can take the fight anywhere and finish you.
It's unbelievable. He's got incredible striking, great grappling. The thing that really struck me about him is his fast decision-making. Like, he's always looking to put his opponent in trouble. And when he gets into trouble, he's able to get out of trouble and put his opponent in trouble just as quickly. Like, yeah. Shaman took him down, and then suddenly he's on top of him and he's elbowing him. But it happens in a flash.
Yeah, it's interesting. In that fight, I didn't see him do almost no mistakes. But he did do one mistake, is when one of the throws he went for, he ended up on bottom mount when he missed the throw. And like you said, in less than, 5 seconds, he ended up sweeping the guy, getting on top of him in full guard and passing his guard and then going for submission attempts right away, which is pretty incredible. You know, like, he's very offensive. He scores a lot. A lot of the decisions he makes are right. I would say probably 95% of decisions he made in that fight were correct. He did one mistake, and, you can write it off because, like, he's making so many decisions in there. Eventually, somebody's going to make one mistake. You know, you can't be perfect all the time. So I give my hats off to him for that performance, and I can't wait to see him fight someone who's a little bit better skilled and a little bit more seasoned in the UFC.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting about his mistake is he was able to capitalize on his own mistake, which was cool. Like, you know, you don't get to see that all the time. You don't see guys that are able to so quickly turn it around.
Yeah, of course. You know, that's what I'm impressed by. You know, he did one mistake in that fight, and yeah, he turned it around. But who knows? Like, the fact that he was able to sweep the guy has a lot to do with two factors: him and his opponent. You know, like, yeah, he did the right decision, the right move to turn it around. But also, the guy on top was maybe a little exhausted from taking, from losing the fight, from taking a lot of shots, from getting wrestled a lot, from being on the bottom most of the fight. So his opponent couldn't take advantage of the fact that Zabit made a mistake too, as well. So, you know, there's two factors: there's him and there's his opponent. That you have to thank for how come he was able to turn that around.
Yeah, well, Moraes, for a time, was considered the best unsigned bantamweight in the world. But, I mean, again, this is a featherweight fight. So, he's fighting up a weight class, but I think his last couple fights have been at featherweight. I personally think that he has more of the build of a bantamweight, but he's pretty thick, though.
Yeah, he's very thick, and, he was just a little bit shorter than Zabit, but he wasn't that much smaller than him. I didn't find, muscularly. You know, I thought muscularly, he looked like he belonged at featherweight, but I haven't seen him fight at bantamweight, so I'd have to take a look at that as well.
Yeah, and Magomed Sharipov lands 11 takedowns in the fight. It's the most tied for the most in featherweight history with Jimmy Hettis, which was a cool stat about Zabit. Another interesting thing I noticed about him is, he's so young in the sport and he's considered a big prospect. He's 9 months older than Max Holloway, the current champion.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the meteoric rise of Max and how good he is.
Yeah, I find age in the MMA has changed a lot. Like, a long time ago, you used to be in your prime at, 27, 28. Now it looks like your prime is 35, 34.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these guys are becoming world champion in their later 30s. I don't remember which light heavyweight pointed it out, but everyone at 185 is supposedly, at 205 is in their late 30s in the top 10.
Heavyweight's the same, I think.
Heavyweight's the same, even like Bisping, who's probably one of the best middleweights, he's also 38. Like, a lot of the guys are getting much better later because there's so many facets to fighting, There's grappling, there's striking, so you got to get good at all these things. And it takes a lot of time to develop skills in all these areas. So it's normal that in our sport, in the MMA, that you get better closer to your mid-30s than you would in your 20s because there's so much information, there's so much skill work to do that it takes time to get really good.
And you're just able to, again, you're able to sharpen your skills for so much more time. If you look at, I think the best example of something like that is Frankie Edgar against Yair Rodriguez. Yeah. You just got to see how much better Frankie was than Yair just from all those years of experience. And Yair was putting on a show. He was beating guys.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say Frankie's a better kicker than Yair. You know what I mean? Like, he's a better fighter, like MMA fighter than Yair, of course, because he's more well-rounded. You know, he knows how to wrestle. He knows how to block the kicks. Like, maybe he doesn't have the kick level offensively, but he knows how to block the kicks enough to get inside, take the guy down, and pound him on the ground. And Yair showed that he had some weaknesses in his game that weren't on par with Frankie. Was Frankie the better wrestler? Yeah. Was Frankie the better grappler in that fight? Yes. And it's not to say that Yair can't overcome this and come back and beat Frankie one day. You know, no one's saying that. I'm not saying that. But in one facet, Yair is better than him at kicking offensively. But in the other facets, it looked like Frankie was able to put it together and get the win.
Yeah, it's a good learning experience for him. He gets to see what it's like to be on, you know, the other side of... I mean, he dominated BJ Penn. He was destroying BJ Penn. But then in his next fight, he goes up against a guy like Frankie, and he gets to see what it's like to be in deep water.
Yeah, which is another great point because, you know, styles make fights, and BJ's a puncher, and he holds a boxing guard. So he's more susceptible to kicks to the arm. Kicks to the arm, when your hands are closer to your face, are a lot more damaging and throw you off a lot more than when you're blocking them to enter the legs to shoot. You know, BJ wasn't really going to shoot very much. BJ's number one tactic is roll a punch and answer with a left hook. Roll a punch, throw a cross. So when you try to roll kicks, you get kicked in the head and you get stopped. And then the more you get kicked in the arms, the less chance you want to take, the less you want to roll because you might get kicked in the head when you're rolling. So like the kick game plan worked very well with BJ, but it wouldn't work as well as a guy on a guy who is going to try to take you down because kicks are much easier to catch. They're much longer limbs than arms. So if you're throwing kicks, you're giving a guy a long lever to grab.
And Frankie's one of these guys that he'll seize an opportunity in a second, in a split second. Like George. I mean, George is the same way. George, if he sees an opportunity to get a takedown, he's on top of you.
Yeah,
and
but
Frankie's
also
the same
way. It has to do with their body type. Like when you watch guys, some guys are explosive double leg guys. Some guys are powerful lifters. So you have to plan differently. Like Damian Maia doesn't have the same wrestling as George, but he's also extremely efficient. Like I would still put Damian's takedowns up there, like near George. Not as good as George because I think the timing's a little bit off. But the way he shoots is he shoots in for a single, takes your back, you know, shoots in for a single, puts you on the ground, or shoots in for a single, goes down and sweeps you, you know. But George never goes on his back first. George clears you off the ground. Frankie can pick you up, you know. It's a very different type of wrestling. But that's the thing. When you watch it, when you analyze somebody, you have to analyze their style, analyze their physical attributes, analyze what's in their heart, analyze what's in their mind, how they think, how they can react in a fight. You know, there's so many factors to learn.
You mentioned older fighters having success later in their career, and you mentioned Michael Bisping. He lost to George 4 weeks ago and was back in the octagon in Shanghai against Kelvin Gastelum in a fight that really didn't go his way. I mean, you got to see what it was like when a guy takes a fight on that kind of short notice, that it might not be the same fighter you've seen all of those other times.
Yeah, of course. Like, in my opinion, like I'm obviously not a doctor, but maybe he got concussed slightly, you know, even if it's not like a major concussion that he got with George. But he did get dropped, and he got hit with a lot of elbows. And, you know, you don't need to be knocked out cold to get a concussion. And I feel like 3 weeks to take another fight is a little bit rushed, you know. But he's a man, and he decided to fight. You know, he's doing it for himself and maybe make a paycheck or something like that. But if he would have won that fight, we'd have a totally different conversation. We'd all be admiring how smart he was and how courageous he is to take the chance. So... my hat's off to Bisping, all the respect in the world to him, and he decided to do what he wanted.
Yeah, if Bisping wins that fight, maybe he fights Whitaker in Australia. You know,
oh, man, that would be incredible.
Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? But Whitaker's a tough fight. I wouldn't want to retire on that fight.
I don't think so either.
Whitaker is a beast of
and
an athlete.
And I know Bisping
man.
Has his heart set on fighting in London. I mean, there are a lot of good potential opponents for him. You know, one guy that I mentioned to you beforehand was Jorge Masvidal, because they've got some sort of outside the cage beef. Masvidal has fought at 155. He'd be a smaller opponent, but I don't think Masvidal would shy away from that fight at 185. And then there's also Masvidal's teammate, Yoel Romero, who wants to get a piece of Bisping.
Man.
That would be a tall order for Bisping for a retirement fight. And then there's guys like Lyoto Machida has been mentioned that I've seen. Another perfect one that could send Bisping out on a win would be Vitor Belfort, because I don't think Vitor is the same.
I don't
Vitor.
Know, man. Vitor's training at TriStar now. You got to watch out. Vitor is new and young and renewed.
Well, he won his last fight.
He won his last fight. He promised my brother 5 more fights, you know, and now I think he's fighting Uriah Hall, right?
Yeah, that's right. He's fighting Uriah Hall next year.
He's at TriStar right now, man, and, you know, he's working on his skills. We've got him working with a bunch of different coaches, and he's really loving working at TriStar, and it's nice to see him smiling every day. You know, he's one of those guys who comes into the gym happy with his life, and not only happy with his life, but happy with, you know, being able to fight and to live his dream. So I'm looking forward to him coming out there and beating Uriah Hall.
Is he living in the dorms?
No. He's got much more money than that. He is able to live a much nicer life.
He doesn't share room with Elias Theodoru. They don't just
No. Even Elias doesn't live in the dorms.
He got his own place in Montreal recently.
Vitor is a much higher level, much higher pay.
I'm jealous of Elias. He's out in Australia living it up after his win.
Yeah. I just saw some of his posts. He's enjoying himself, and it's great, man. When you win, you get double the paycheck. It's so sweet. This is the first time I've ever lost in my MMA career. It's the first time I get half a check. Oh, man, does it suck.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're probably budgeting that extra money already before it happens.
Yeah, of course. But, like, even before the fight, I always planned that I'm going to, like, I always planned my financial situation like I'm going to lose. And that
That's smart.
The win is always the bonus. It's always the gravy on the boat. So we'll see what happens now. You know, we'll get another fight soon in a few months in the next year.
You mentioned you were an accounting major.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You know, my wife's an accounting major as well. So we're keeping those books tight.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. You can't budget money you don't have.
Yes,
you have to wait for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's good. It's a good tool because a lot of these fighters, I think, you know, it's not a lot of money. When you think of pro athletes and how much pro athletes make, if you're getting 40 and 40 and you're fighting once, twice a year,
I'm getting 10 and 10.
Are you currently getting 10 and 10?
My first fight was 10 and 10. This last fight was supposed to be 12 and 12, but I lost, so I only got 12. Yeah. I feel like, you know, it would be great if they changed it to 80-20. Like, you get 80% of your money, and then if you win, you get another 20%.
But Bellator is starting to do something like that for a lot of their fighters.
Yeah.
They're starting to
pay UFC now, they're doing more, like, guaranteed money for, like, once you reach, I think, the top 15, you don't see the 50-50 as much anymore, or top 5, you know? And that's great. That's great, because we need a little bit more security in our lives as well. And, you know, it's not easy when you lose. And, like, something like, let's say, like, I lost now, I can't fight, you know, super, as soon as I would want because I got knocked out, so I got a concussion. But like, if I would have lost by a submission and my arm didn't break, you know, I'd be able to fight again much easier and it wouldn't be as bad, you know what I mean? But now I got to take some, you know, time, a little bit more time because of my head injury, you know, so that's it.
How do you maintain, you know, a good lifestyle with only a 12-12 contract? I've always wondered about that with guys that are, I guess you were fighting on Fight Pass, you're at the bottom of the card.
Yeah.
How do you maintain, you know, a good standard of living at that kind of weight?
Well, teaching privates. So if anybody in the Montreal area is looking for privates, contact me. But also teaching privates and sponsorships and friends and family, man, their support, you know, take care of me. You know, like I'm very lucky to have, you know, my cousin Samir Zahabi who helps me out. My good friend Carl Carter, and also Robbie Stein who really take care of me. And I have lots of other sponsors, you know, who come out and help me in a big way. You know, the guys here from Lost and Found, Rich, Dimitri, and Steve, you know, they help me out a lot. So it's all about friends and family. It's about your network who really support you and push you to the next fight.
Yeah, and I guess it depends on where in the world you're from. Because if you're from, you know, a very poor part of Brazil and you're getting paid, I don't know, 12 and 12,
yeah,
that's life-changing money for you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Right away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like $24,000 if you get a win, that's, you know, that's raises
money,
your standard,
yeah,
of living. Whereas, if, I mean, Montreal's not a cheap city to live. You know, you're lucky you don't live here in Toronto.
Yeah, it would have been even worse.
Yeah, it's even worse. I mean, there's not a lot of places in the outskirts that people can even afford here. It's just, you know, it's just a very expensive city.
Yeah, of course. Even me, like, well, now I just bought my condo. I didn't buy it in the city of Montreal. I had to buy it, like, 25, 30 minutes away. So I'm living in Blainville, you know, so where it's more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
So I get more bang for my buck.
Yeah, you know, I've been married for 10 years. We had to look for somewhere outside of the city also. I guess it's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, but it's great. You know, I make do with what I have, and I'm very happy. And decorating my place is going great. And my wife's happy. She's really happy with the place.
She's right here with you. Yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah, she's here. And, you know, my life's great. I have nothing to complain about. You know, what was interesting about the fight is even though I lost, I actually got more text messages and phone calls and messages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram than I did when I won my first fight in UFC, which was great because a lot of times when you lose is when people walk away from you. And I had the opposite. You know, when I lost, more people came out of the woodwork to help support me and get me back on the horse than when I won my fight to pat me on the back, tell me good luck, congrats, you know. So it was nice to have everyone come together. Even like after the fight in my hotel room, everyone came by, everyone came to see me. When I got home to Montreal, people would come visiting me all the time, calling me, making sure that everything was good. Even I was feeling great. Like, I didn't have any shame after my fight. I feel like I was doing really well. And it's just one of those things that happened. You know, he made the decision to throw the elbow, and I made the decision to throw those punches and stay in the pocket a little bit longer than, you know, in hindsight, I feel like I stayed a little bit too long in the pocket. But it is what it is, and now we're moving on to the next fight.
Hey, you know, I mentioned that to you when you first got here, is that the thing that I really liked seeing was everybody in your hotel room afterwards, even though, yeah, you had lost, you know, because losing is lonely sometimes. You know, sometimes,
yeah,
you lose and people, you know, they're like, they kind of want to be cautious about how your, you know, your well-being and how you're feeling. It was good to see that you have such a good support system around you.
Yeah, and that's the thing I'm the most thankful for. Like, you know, more money would be great and all this stuff, you know, like, I wish I had more, but it comes with winning. But one thing that's hard to develop is a good support system and a good family and good set of friends. You know, it's like a lifetime worth building, and all the relationships I've had, it didn't come, you know, overnight. It's just us spending time together all the time and building a strong bond. And that's the thing I'm the most grateful for is my friends and family who are always with me from the beginning till now when I lose till when I come back.
Hey, you know, I interviewed you before that fight, and just from speaking to you, I can tell that you're a really good, genuine person. Like, I just get that sense. And then when we met in New York and just chatted a little bit, you know, nothing on camera or whatever, yeah. You know, then seeing you get knocked out that next night, for me, to be able to see you afterwards with such a strong support system, you know, that makes just anybody who knows you, I'm sure, feel good that, you know, you've got people that have your back, which is just nice to see.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I had my 30th birthday party last weekend, and my wife was surprised me with a party. Like, I thought, when she told me we're going to a restaurant, I thought we were going to be like 10 people, you know, like just my close friends. Because, like, I just got married. I just bought a place. I just fought. Like, I've had so many events go on. I felt like people are fed up with seeing me and talking about me and all that stuff or whatever, talking about what's happening and worrying about me and all these things. So I was like, okay, let's keep it small as possible. And I show up to the restaurant. The place was full. It was like 60-something people came for my birthday. And, like, that was really touching because, like, I know they spent the last couple of weeks, you know, supporting me before the fight, then during the fight, and now for my birthday, they even came out for that. And I spent time with every single person, talking to them and seeing how they're doing, and they were checking up on me, and it was really nice to connect with everybody who cared about me, you know, at my birthday. So I want to thank them all for showing up. It was
great. You mentioned to me your wedding was the best wedding you'd been to, and I got confirmation of that from Joe Duffy when I spoke to him. He goes, "Oh, it was unbelievable."
Yeah, it was incredible, man. It's too bad Joe Duffy couldn't cheat too hard.
He couldn't eat that much.
We had little baby stomachs, man, but the food was great, and the DJ did a great job. DJ Clicks, you guys should check him out. He's from Montreal. He does weddings all year, and he really did an amazing job. He didn't play not one top 40 during my wedding, which is incredible. He played us the old early 2000 hip-hops, the 90 hip-hop songs, the Arabic songs, Armenian songs. He did a great job. So everyone was on the dance floor most of the night. It was great.
Yeah, there you go. That's the stuff you want to hear at a wedding. Yeah, you want to hear the new stuff.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what it was about. I was just basically partying and dancing with the family. It was great.
That's good. You know, I finally understood Joe after meeting him. I never when I set up an interview with Joe for Off the Record years ago.
Yeah.
And when we kept trying to get him to talk about Connor and how he beat Connor, and he was like, "Oh, that was a long time ago. I'm just looking ahead." And I was like, "Why doesn't this guy talk about it? You can build your name off." And then when I met him and was face to face with him, I go, "This isn't the type of guy that wants to build his name off someone else. He just wants to build his name by beating guys now." he's not the type of guy to look back.
You know, a lot of people say that he should be talking about it, calling out McGregor and this and that. But I feel like 90% of the people, their perspective on that would be that, "Oh, he's so bitter. Oh, he beat him years ago before Conor McGregor was Conor McGregor and this and that." And I feel like, you know, it's not wrong either to think like that, you know, and I think that's how Joe Duffy sees him. You know, he beat him when he beat him, and now they've been on two separate paths, you know, and McGregor is a champ, and Joe Duffy, you know, he's working his way up the rankings. You know, he just lost his last fight. You know, it's not a big deal. He'll come back. He'll fight again. Obviously, he's not done. But when he gets to the top five, top three, I feel like it's a more honorable time to call out Conor McGregor, and I feel like Joe's on the same page with that. And, you know, us, we're, you know, guys from TriStar, we like people who have a good head on their shoulders and, you know, don't talk badly about other people and try to build themselves by putting other people down. You know, there's no point of shaming Conor McGregor because you beat him 5 years ago. He's accomplished so much, you know, so far.
Well, one of your teammates did put someone down recently. Alex Garcia goes into China, puts Muslim Salikov on his back and spoils the party, ruins his debut. He put him down literally, though, not figuratively.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering, who is he talking trash about? No, but yeah, that was a great fight, and he was a big underdog for that one, especially there in that country, like you were telling me earlier. I didn't know that he was a four-time Wushu national champion, which is incredible. And then, yeah, he stopped him, put him on his back the first couple of rounds, and he was able to get the finish, which is incredible. And the thing I'm most proud of with Garcia is his increased stamina and his ability to continue to grind out the fight, in that he no longer is a front runner. You know, He's adapted so well, and he's become the fighter that we've always seen him he could become.
Yeah, it was good to see. It was good to see that strategy work for him because, you know, the one thing that you know about Muslim Salikov, if he is this, you know, Wing Chun and Wushu champion, is that he can strike.
Yeah, and he threw a beautiful hook kick that was timed amazingly, but luckily Garcia had his hands up and he protected it and took most of it on the forearm. And he took one good body shot, actually. Muslim got him with a sweet body shot, and you see, like, or I think it was in round one, and you see Alex Garcia kind of tuck his elbow over his liver to make sure that doesn't happen again. But, you know, the wrestling kind of maybe fatigued a Muslim and kind of slowed down his ability to find a clear pathway to either his chin, temple, or liver. And then Alex Garcia exposed him on the ground.
Yeah, so that was good for Alex to get back on the winning track. He's a fun fighter to watch. He was you know, he's been considered a strong prospect for a long time. So, you know, another thing that I thought was interesting about that card was that, you know, the Chinese fighters went 5-3, which I think is more Chinese wins in the UFC than the rest of the year combined in terms of Chinese fighters, just because there aren't that many of them. But they're showcasing them at this event. And it was interesting to see, because you don't think of China as really hot, as a real hotbed for talent. But when you look at, you know, one championship, they've developed a lot of good Chinese fighters. Yeah. And for the UFC to go to mainland China and see those fighters like Wang Guan, for example, beat Alex Caceres. He looks very good.
That was a great fight. Yeah. Fantastic fight. And Alex Caceres showed great heart in that fight. Incredible. Yeah, incredible resilience.
The second biggest favorite on the card was Bobby Nash, and he lost to Song Kanon in 15 seconds.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that fight.
Yeah, so that was that was interesting to see as well. It's basically just...
But it's odd to say that, like, I'm surprised there's not more Chinese or Asian fighters in UFC, in the sense because, like, their fighting history goes deep. Like, martial arts come from Asia, you know, and it's pretty incredible. I thought they'd be more into MMA. Like, I know they're into traditional martial arts more, but you think, like, those elite guys would start doing more cage fighting to put their to put their martial art to the test.
Yeah, I think a lot of the issues are, you know, surround visa issues with the government. I think that there might be complications in bringing guys over. You know, two of the guys that were on the Ultimate Fighter China that fought against each other, one of them was Zhang Lipong.
Okay.
And the other one was Wang Sai.
Okay.
And they've both been released from the organization. One of them's gone, I think Wang Sai's gone 14-1, and Zhang Lipong's gone 16-1 since getting let go. And they got let go like 2.5 years ago. They're racking up fights.
Incredible.
But they're doing really well outside, so it would be nice to bring them back.
Yeah, of course, man. That'd be incredible. And if they start doing more fights in Asia, maybe they'll have a chance to shine over there. If not, then those guys got to move to Las Vegas, start taking advantage of the UFC Performance
Center. Or Montreal.
Or Montreal, yeah, exactly.
What do you think of the Performance Center? Have you gone down yet?
I got it. It's a beautiful Performance Center. Just I don't see how I can be out there to train, you know?
Like, right, yeah.
You know, if I was getting paid $150,000 a year, $100,000 a year, I could rent a hotel room there, because you got to rent a hotel maybe at the Holiday Inn, I think, to get us a deal. And then I got to rent a car and then train there.
Yeah, there's no transit there.
There's no transit. Yeah, exactly.
And it's hot.
And it's off the strip, you know, which is good, I guess, because you won't get distracted as much. But the Performance Center is great. It looks fantastic. Just, I don't know how we're going to be able to use it, you know. I think it's really good for the offices, and, like, maybe if there are fights in Las Vegas, guys can go and use it. It's nice, beautiful, but I don't see how I can take advantage of it.
Well, one guy fighting there that's basically been training there for his entire training camp is fighting this weekend. It's Francis Ngannou. I saw Faraz was on they were running ads during the card today with Faraz on it, talking about it, the kind of specimen Francis Ngannou is. And one other interesting thing about Francis is I interviewed him, I guess it was at the beginning of this year. I was out in Vegas for UFC, the one where Ferguson and Khabib were supposed to fight. I think it was, I can't remember, 209 maybe. And I mentioned to him, I asked him, what do you think of George St. Pierre coming back?
Yeah.
And he said, I've never seen him fight before. Yeah. Because Ngannou's been training for 4 years. Like, he started training right when George was, like, wrapping it up before his, you know, before his long hiatus, which I thought was so interesting because, you know, again, he was a French-speaking fighter, and he just had no frame of reference for him, which I thought was, you know, that just shows how new he is in the sport. Now he's one win away from, you know, a shot at the heavyweight title.
Yeah, it was just pretty incredible, you know. I think it says a lot about the UFC, the heavyweight division, you know, that a guy who's only been training for 4 years, you know, like, he's a great specimen physically, you know, great attributes, and he has the will to fight, that's for sure. But how much wrestling experience does he have? How much striking experience does he have? How much skill does he have? How much, you know, development in his grappling game has he had? You know, there's a lot of great fighters, but the heavyweight division, it really depends on the punching power, man. It's just landing that one strike, you know, which is crazy because, you know, like, even Brock Lesnar, who hasn't trained MMA that long, was two-time heavyweight world champion, which is crazy because they have just so much power. The skill, like, it, you know, they may not be the deepest, you know, like, whereas, like, 125, you see, like, amazing fighters like Demetrius Johnson, who's incredibly skilled in all facets. You know, guys like Jose Aldo, amazing grappler, amazing striker, great defensive wrestler. You know, guys like, you know, George St. Pierre, Tyron Woodley, so many great guys. But the heavyweight division is really about raw power, man. The guys who have raw power can do so much, so much. But, you know, a lot of them are skilled. Like, let's say, like, Alistair Overeem, highly skilled striker. You know, Miocic, amazing striker. You know, all these guys are highly skilled. Verdum, like, so many guys are incredibly skilled. Honestly, I haven't seen Francis Ngannou fight, so I don't know how skilled he is in striking and in wrestling. I just, all I hear about is how much of an animal he is, how physically gifted he is, you know. So I'm excited to see him fight soon because it'll be my first time watching a fight, and I can't wait to see it. Just to know, like, is he a great boxer? Is he a great wrestler? Is he a great? I don't know. I haven't really seen him fight much either.
Well, I'm hoping he's highly skilled. The fights aren't very long.
Oh no, they're quick. That's
good. Yeah, go and fight that. You know, he fought Curtis Blaydes, who's one of the best wrestlers at heavyweight, and was able to stuff the takedowns.
Oh, that's awesome.
He had a win by Kimura against Anthony Hamilton. So he's
He's got submissions. He's got submissions. Okay, great. So he's well rounded. He's doing really well. Okay, great. Yeah. That's great. I haven't seen him, so I don't know. I'm just saying off the top of my head, how crazy is it that a guy who's only trained for 4 years can get so high?
Yeah,
so
it's just weird. I mean, he's been training for 17 months longer than CM Punk. Like
that's insane.
Comparatively, like how hard is it to make a mark outside of the heavyweight division when you haven't been training long? I guess Elias is a good example. He hasn't been training for that long. I mean,
I don't know. He's 28-0 kickboxing amateur before fighting.
Yeah, but in terms of MMA, like in terms of sheer MMA training, I think he's pretty new. He mentioned it in his post-fight interview against
I don't know how long it's been. Yeah. I don't know how long it's been. I don't know. But yeah, it's pretty outstanding. And in 4 years, you can reach the top. It's crazy. The world, like the heavyweight division, is insane.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Crazy.
Like Brock Lesnar got a title fight. I don't know how fast. Like when he lost to,
I think he was when he won the belt, he was 3-1.
Yeah, but when he lost to Frank Mir the first time, I think it was the second fight.
It was his second pro fight.
That's incredible.
His first pro fight was outside of the organization.
That's incredible. And then how many fights has Francis Ngannou had in the UFC?
I think he's had five or six.
Five fights in the UFC, one and all. That's crazy. Yeah. It's incredible. What an athlete.
Yeah, and it's all been within like the last year and a half or something
like that. That's incredible. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, he's an incredible athlete. He's 31, which for heavyweights is pretty young, all things considered.
Young. Very young.
But he's just, I mean, when you see the mitts on this guy,
it's huge,
pretty crazy.
Man.
And they just posted this thing on Instagram this week. He was at, I think it was at the Performance Institute or somewhere where they can measure strikes, like how hard
Performance Institute.
And his strike registered as the hardest strike ever.
Oh, wow, nice.
Like more than like boxers, more than like pro boxers. And,
that's incredible.
Yeah, he had beat the record for the strongest strike ever landed.
Wow, that's incredible. Good for him.
Yeah, so he's going
to
be something to watch.
That's probably why he made it to the top in 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when he first started training,
I guess his best skill is power.
Punching power. But he's able to stuff takedowns.
Yeah, that's incredible.
When he first started training, Overeem had already fought professionally 49 times. And now he's fighting against Overeem. Yeah, so that'll be
that's right. He's fighting Overeem. That's a super interesting fight because, you know, Overeem is put in high regard in my mind. You know, he's a super highly skilled athlete. So
this new Overeem has been fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
He's not relying on that sheer power anymore because his chin hasn't been as good as it had.
Yeah. But you're saying, if Francis lands one punch, it might be over early.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Overeem's 5-1 in his last six with the one loss coming to Stipe. So, you know, he's building up a resume of his own.
Stipe is one of my favorite fighters right now. He's incredible.
Oh, man. He can do everything.
He's one of those heavyweights that, you know, you got to respect, like a Verdum, like an Alistair. Like, he's highly skilled and he's a champion for a reason, you know. And if you guys, you know, what I'm hearing now from you about Francis, looks like he's one of those guys too. So it's good.
Yeah,
Francis
is a specimen. I mean, all it takes is one shot with Francis. If he hits you, you're in trouble. But I can't see anybody beating Stipe. I just think he's so far ahead of everybody.
He got dropped in the Overeem fight.
He lost to Struve, but I mean, he got dropped by Overeem in the first
Overeem,
round.
Right?
Yeah,
Overeem dropped him. The thing is, that's like what I was telling you about the heavyweight division is anybody could win with one punch. Doesn't matter. Even when Cain Velasquez lost to, who is it, JDS? With one punch.
In like 45 seconds.
Yeah,
First
fight on Fox, he lost with one punch and... That's what being in the heavyweight division is. You know, it's not easy.
Yeah,
it's scary. It's scary to be the heavyweight. Yeah. I would never want to fight a heavyweight, and I would never disrespect the heavyweight.
Well, I mean, I don't think you at 135 pounds wants to fight a heavyweight.
No, never.
There aren't a lot of heavyweights at TriStar, are there?
No, I think like our cutoff is like 185.
Okay,
we have like
you just cut
280, 185ers. No, like we don't tell people not to come. It's just
Well, it's like Team
we
Alpha
don't
Male.
Have any.
Team Alpha Male doesn't have any.
Yeah, yeah, any no, yeah. Like our deepest division as a part of a team is a 170 probably, and then 135, 145. No, 135, 155.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Elias, I guess, is 185. Yeah. So that's what you're saying is the cutoff. Yeah. And Vitor is 185.
Yeah. Vitor, Francis Carmon, and a couple other guys. Like not like in the UFC, but that's the last weight class we have a lot of people in.
So when you look at heavyweight and then you look at flyweight, do you think anybody could beat Demetrius Johnson? I'm just riffing now.
Everyone's beatable, but Demetrius Johnson, you're gonna have to kill him in there.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to kill him there. Yeah, yeah. It's not gonna be easy, and I don't see right now in the top five, top three, it's gonna be hard.
We've got Cejudo Pettis, and I think the winner of that fight is the clear top contender in that division. Cejudo looked unbelievable in Edmonton when he fought Wilson Hayes. It was
incredible. Yeah. Did he beat him faster than Demetrius beat him or no?
I think he did. I think he beat him early in the second round or the first round. I can't remember. He did beat him earlier.
Yeah,
but Demetrius, I mean, Demetrius tapped Wilson Hayes, which is just mind like Wilson Hayes is the world jiu-jitsu champion.
Yeah, of course. See, like someone like Cejudo hasn't been in MMA for long, you know, right? He hasn't been training MMA for long. He's been training wrestling his whole life. He's got incredible skills. Even in striking, his striking is looking great every time he fights. Like, it's getting better and better, you know. And, you know, now that you can tell me like that about Francis Ngannou, I feel like leaving this podcast right now and going to search his fights.
Yeah,
seeing how good he is.
I mean, well, spend time with
now
your wife
the hype,
in the city.
Now the hype
then,
sounds more real to me.
When you have
know?
Some time away, you know, where you don't want to dedicate to fighting, you know, where you can dedicate to fighting, you should watch them. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
The main event of UFC 218, Holloway versus Aldo. Aldo won the first two rounds against Holloway. And I mean, Aldo, the one thing that we didn't see against Holloway was the leg kicks. I mean, that's Aldo's trademark. I think we're definitely going to see more of it this time around. You know, Holloway's trajectory has been unbelievable, but anybody's beatable. And I think that Aldo is, you know, he's a tall order. People forget how much Aldo put it on Frankie Edgar very recently, within the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So I don't want to write off Aldo as somebody who doesn't have a shot at getting that belt back.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't think this is the fight that he's going to win. I feel like Max Holloway, you know, now financially he's more secure. His life is much more stable. And that's only going to make it more dangerous because he's going to be able to put more time and effort in his training, and he's hiring the best guys. Like, I know he's got the guys from Fitness VT out there living with him right now, getting his diet down perfect. And I'm sure he's hiring better coaches, and he's got more downtime to relax in between training sessions. And there is no, I don't know how to say this other than, like, the more successful you become, the more successful you're likely to be as well. And I feel like he's in that sweet spot of success where it's only going to be get more success, you know, and I see him not just winning and beating Aldo, but like putting Aldo away completely.
You think it'll be better than the first fight?
Much better than the first fight, and not to say that Aldo is no good. Not to say that Aldo is no good.
He's not done. It's also a bad stylistic matchup for Aldo.
I'm not saying he's done either. I just feel like, you know, Max Holloway's in that sweet spot of experience, skill, and drive, and that part in his life where he's, you know, it's gonna be hard to stop him. It's gonna be very hard.
11 in a row. He's 25 years old. Like,
yeah. And he's hungry, man. He's not even full. He's not even close to full. He just wants more. And I feel like Aldo already kind of talking about retirement. You have kind of one foot out the door. It's hard to win a big fight when you have one foot out the door. Like, I think he was talking about moving to boxing. You know, maybe that's more his passion now than MMA.
He wants to play soccer also.
Or play soccer as well. Yeah. And like, you know, that just takes away a little bit from your hunger to fight. And like, I feel like Aldo in his prime would have a much better chance against Max Holloway this weekend, you know. But the Aldo who wants to retire, change sports, do something else, may not be as hungry as the Max Holloway who's loving his life right now, who's doing everything he can to keep that belt, you know, and doesn't want to lose his lifestyle. And he's so humble, and he has so much gratitude for everything he has. I don't see him wanting to give it up.
You know, I put out a poll question asking which of the following champions would be the easiest for Conor McGregor to beat. It was Holloway, Ferguson, Woodley, and GSP were the four options.
Yeah.
And Holloway was like far and away the guy that everybody picked. It was like 49%. I know that Conor's beaten Holloway before, but that was a different Holloway.
Who was the second guy you named?
Ferguson.
Ferguson? Or Ferguson would be the easiest to beat.
I agree with you.
Definitely Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Like, not to say anything bad about Ferguson's a great fighter.
I think Ferguson will beat Conor when
they
fight,
but
if
you make me choose in that list, like, I'm not saying that Ferguson's bad. He's obviously, you know, in title contention, interim champ. Big hats off, respect to him. Great jiu-jitsu, great fighter, great heart, incredible work ethic. Like, he's all those things. But in that list, if you have to choose one, I would say I would lean towards him. You know, also because Tyron is much bigger than them. And
George
is bigger than them as well. And, you know, they've got great wrestling. And Chad Mendes took down McGregor in 4 seconds of the first round, in the fight that they had. And I guess Tyron and George would be able to do the same thing, being much bigger than him. Chad's, you know, shorter, smaller, doesn't have the arm reach that George or Tyron would have. You know, he does have the same explosiveness and great timing as well, for sure. Like, that's on par with those guys. But, like, these arms are so much shorter than George. Yeah, George has a crazy reach.
Yeah,
he had a longer reach than Bisping. You know, and I think that, you know, kind of eliminate them from that list. And I also think Max Holloway already went the distance with McGregor, even though McGregor was injured in that fight.
Yeah,
I think
he tore his ACL.
Yeah, actually, probably tore it before the fight.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the rumor anyway. So I don't know if it's true or not, but like, Max Holloway already went the distance. And Tony Ferguson, round one, takes more punches than Tony Ferguson in round two. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. That's like, I don't have the stats, but like when I watch his fights, you know, when you watch him against Vanata, he got damaged a lot more in round one than he did in round two.
And you can take strikes from Vanata, but from Connor?
Yeah, man. And even with Vanata, it's hard to take strikes. Yeah. Like, Vanata's a knockout artist. Like, I love Vanata. He's one of my favorite fighters in the UFC right now. But Tony gets hit a lot in round one compared to his round twos. Like, in round two, he adapts so much better. But in round one, Connor has his most power. And if he's going to hit you the most in round one, that's his benefit and that's your weakness. It kind of makes you, you know, the lesser chance of winning in that list of four.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that that would give him the most trouble. Like, and I think that Khabib would have a very good shot against Connor too. I think Khabib could just throw him around. But
man, I don't know if he can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think if you add Khabib to that list,
yeah,
I pick Khabib to lose.
Yeah, me too. I think over Ferguson. I don't know about that.
Over Ferguson, man. And I'll tell you why. Just because Connor now, he's so much better at striking that now all he's going to do when he comes back is focus on not getting taken down or how to sweep, submit, and get up.
Yeah.
You know, so like because he's shut down, that no one in that division is going to be able to strike with him on his level now. Like Khabib is a great, incredible wrestler. Like probably no one can wrestle like Khabib in that division, just like no one can strike with McGregor in that division really right now. And for him, I feel like if McGregor focuses on being able to stuff takedowns and keep the range, and if Khabib can't take him down, he can knock him out, man. Like he got hurt with Michael Johnson.
And it's tough to get a read on Khabib. I mean, he hasn't lost a round in his
He's never lost
career.
A round?
Never lost a round.
That's incredible.
But at the same time,
okay, take it back. Khabib is on top of Ferguson.
Well, he hasn't beaten that many top level guys. I mean, he beat RDA as his best win, I would say. But RDA back then was, I think, 3-2 in his last five. He wasn't the same RDA that won the championship. So,
but RDA also lost to Clay Guida. You know, what does that say?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
You know, everyone gets better as you know. Whether you lose to one guy then and you lose like now, like even. You know, who's to say he would lose to Clay Guida again, RDA? Yeah.
But I think if Ferguson ends up fighting Khabib, that's a terrible matchup for Khabib. I think Ferguson is a tougher opponent for Khabib than Conor would be.
Man, that's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. That's just how I feel.
I have so much...
I think that if you take Ferguson down and you get in that rubber guard, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, you
and
can
that's Khabib's like strongest weapon by far is taking him down.
McGregor probably won't sub Khabib, but he could knock him out.
Yeah. Well, one thing Khabib's really good at actually is taking down into side control. And that's where he'd have good success against Tony, in my opinion. But if he takes Khabib down and ends up in Khabib's guard, in Ferguson's guard, that's problematic.
Man, it's a tough call. Who'd have a better chance against Conor between those two guys?
Well, while we're in the lightweight division, we got what I think might be a coin flip fight between Alvarez and Gaethje this weekend.
Yeah,
that's a tough one to call.
You can't know who wins. You can't know who wins.
I lean Alvarez.
I think. I couldn't tell them apart. Like, I mean, not tell them apart.
Though,
I know who's who, but
it's
I mean, like, I couldn't pick one of them to win this fight because they both fight like with heart.
Yeah,
so
neither
much
guy's gonna try to take the other one down. They're both really good wrestlers.
You know, Alvarez might try to take him down.
Maybe. I mean, it just depends on the opportunity. And Gaethje does leave openings for takedowns, but Gaethje's also was
and they both get rocked. They both get hurt. They're both willing to die in there.
Yeah.
And
Alvarez told me on this show. He said the winner of this fight's gonna be crowned the UFC's most violent, and I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, they might have that'd be incredible if they can have a Gotti War trilogy out of this feud.
Yeah. This is a really good main card. This might be the best main card of the year in terms of. Well, I mean, 217 is probably a better main card, but you've got Holloway Aldo, Ngannou, Overeem. For probably number one contender, Pettis Cejudo for number one contender, Alvarez Gaethje, and then Torres and Watterson for the winner of that fight's going to move up in the women's strawweight division for sure. And I think Torres is a pretty underrated fighter who is going to give Watterson some fits.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really watched them all fight too much. I've seen Watterson fight a little bit. I haven't seen Torres fight too much. Like, I don't really watch many categories outside of 135, 155, mm-hmm. 170. Those are the categories I watch because those are the most of the guys that we have on the team. You know, so I don't really know much about their fighting style.
You did call Dillashaw. You called Dillashaw.
Yeah, I called Dillashaw mostly because of his work ethic and his the way he trains and the way his perspective is on preparing for fights. Like, it's incredible. He reminds me a lot of George in his preparation and his mindset. You know, and like, I don't know Cody personally, so it's hard for me to say anything like that about Cody, you know. But what you see in Dillashaw is something that will go down in UFC history books.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, he's probably among the pound for pound best. If they can make that TJ versus Demetrius fight, like, I'm there.
You know, like, I definitely would want to watch it. That's going to be a crazy fight because they're both, almost the same size, really. Like, I know Dillashaw, you know, eats a lot to stay up at 135. Like, he can make 125 easily.
Yeah, he says he can make 125 easily. He says he can get down to a walk-around weight of 140 every morning. And he's perfectly content.
I definitely don't disagree, but there's a lot of guys for him to fight at 135. I would love to see him fight Dominic Cruz.
I don't know if there's a top guy. Well, Cruz is injured. He broke his arm. So
I know he's injured. I know he's injured, but he lost to him. You know, like, and there's always, like, he was on Alpha Male when, you know, it was always Alpha Male trying to beat Dominic Cruz. It was like Alpha Male versus Dominic Cruz. And, like, I know Cody beat him already, but TJ lost him. I'm sure TJ would want that fight back. You know, like, I know, like, it's not like, I don't think he keeps him up.
Yeah.
I thought he won that fight. Mm-hmm. I thought he won that fight. But I'm sure it doesn't keep him up at night, but he would definitely want it back. Like, just for, like, just to have it on his checklist, you know, just do it.
Well, because Cody did it, right? Like, Cody beat Cruz.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So if he can beat Cody, you know, maybe he thinks,
Then it comes back to Styles.
That's true.
Dominic Cruz didn't throw enough head kicks. That's why I picked, another reason why I picked Dillashaw, because, like, Cody's an incredible boxer. Obviously, you know, everybody can see that in any one of his fights.
And his power is
great. It's fantastic. But, you know, he bobs and weaves. And Dominic Cruz didn't throw a lot of head kicks. And Cody was making a miss with bobbing, weaving, head movement, footwork, like all kinds of classic boxing moves and strategies. And he does that at a high level. But TJ's a kickboxer. And when you get kicked in the head a few times, you can't bob and weave as much.
Are there any TriStar fighters on this card?
On which card? 218?
On 218. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
I'm looking forward to a bunch of the fights on the prelims. I like Tamer versus Drakkar Klose. I think that's a good fight.
That's a great fight. I was shocked, man. Like, David Tamer versus
Venata.
Venata. That was an incredible fight.
Tamer looked great.
Tamer, man. Listen, what he said before the fight came true. Like, he was saying something how, like, he's durable and, you know, he hasn't faced a guy who can fight like him. And, you know, even if, you know, no matter how hard the fight goes, he's still going to be standing there and be going, pushing harder and harder. And he proved it because round one was tough for him. Round one was hell, man. Round two was very tough, but I feel like he edged it out. And round three, he was doing super well. And, like, hats off to him, man. He's a very, very tough dude. And Venata did great in that fight, too. But, like, David Tamer just took it away from him.
Yeah,
you know,
striking,
and he adapted really, really well. Yeah. He adapted super well. And, you know, like I said, Venata is one of my favorite fighters. And it was hard, you know, to see him lose because I have so much respect for his striking. But David Tamer, too, is, like, on another level in that category.
Yeah, I think those guys both fought on the same card, him and Klose. And people were expecting them to lose. Like, Klose was fighting Mark Diakhisi.
That guy is amazing, too.
Yeah, Diakhisi is fantastic.
Yeah, I pronounce it Diakhisi, but that's just me. But if it's Diakhisi, that's cool.
Yeah,
now I know how to pronounce
Diakhisi,
it properly.
Yeah.
He's, him too, he's a fantastic striker. And I was surprised. Not that he lost, because anybody can win or lose, and Drakkar Klose is a great wrestler and great fighter, of course. And Drakkar Klose did the right strategy in that fight, and he kept going to the well that was working for him. But I was surprised that Mark didn't start checking the leg kicks more. Like, even me in my fight, the first round, I got hit with a few leg kicks, and my opponent timed it well, and it kind of, like, tripped me up on one of them. But in round two, like, the leg kicks didn't bother me anymore as much, and then round three, there was no leg kicks. I got elbowed.
But stop throwing the leg kick.
Yeah,
stop throwing the leg kick.
Just elbow me in the face, please.
Yeah.
That's so funny. But I thought, you know, he would have adapted better and came out with a win in that one. You know, like, when I was watching them fight, like, he's such a high-level striker, Mark. And, you know, I was surprised a little bit to see him lose. But Drakkar Klose did the right strategy and did everything well. It's going to be interesting to see if Drakkar Klose can take down David Tamer, who's more of a Muay Thai guy, striker, who stand right in front of you and try to, you know, kick your leg off, kick your head off, or punch your head off. That's fight I'm really looking forward to.
So you liked TJ against Garbrandt. He was an underdog. Are there any underdogs on this card that catch your eye? Guys that you think might not be expected to win?
I don't know which one are an underdog.
Yeah,
or if I see them as an underdog.
Yeah,
or
I don't know if the odds are out. Yeah, I can pull
them. Oh, I don't know the odds. Yeah. Who's an underdog? I feel like Sergio would be the underdog in the Henry Cejudo fight.
But, yeah, he probably will be.
Probably, like, in the odds, like, you know, like, what people are betting on. But I feel like he's still got a great chance. He's an incredible striker. But, you know, Henry's probably going to take down Sergio. And then we're going to see how good Sergio is at throwing up that triangle, you know, maybe like his brother, or going to armbar, or maybe just getting back up to his feet and keeping the distance to make sure Henry can't take him down.
Yeah, the odds aren't out yet for any fight except for Aldo versus Holloway.
Who's the favorite?
Oh, Holloway's a 3-1 favorite. He's a big favorite.
Yeah, man, it's going to be hard for Aldo to win that fight. You know, but he skillfully has it. You know, you know, like, he's got so many good things on in his arsenal. It's just, like, mentally, does he want to win it?
If I had to guess the favorites, I think obviously Holloway's already the favorite. But I think Overeem Nagano is going to be tough to call. I think Nagano will be the favorite by the time the fight gets there, because I think there's just so much hype behind it.
I think Nagano, just because of, you know, Alistair's chin.
Yeah, and the hype.
The hype, you know, obviously a lot of people bet money on the hype.
And that's an underdog.
I'll tell you one thing about Francis. I've met him, And, you know, he's not confident, he's certain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that for sure.
He's very certain. And I didn't even feel it like that he was cocky or anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He didn't seem like he had too much of a chip on his shoulder or anything like that. He just seemed certain.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that. I like that in a fighter who's certain, you know, beyond a little bit beyond confident, but not cocky either.
And well, it's tough. I mean, he's got to block out people saying this guy's a future champion. He's either got to block it out or embrace it. Right?
I feel like he's doing really well. Yeah. I feel like mentally, he's on point. You know, like I haven't seen him fight, so I don't know like what his skill level is in grappling, wrestling, striking, all that stuff. Sounds like he has a lot of power, but his mental game is on point.
And so Hudo will be favored. I wouldn't be surprised if Alvarez and Gaethje is just even. Like I don't know.
Nah, that's even. That's for sure even.
I can't put a gauge on that. And I imagine Torres will be favored over Watterson. But I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Yeah.
And I think the Oliveira Felder fight's gonna be good. Well, Charles Oliveira is one of my favorite fighters to watch.
Oh yeah?
He's awesome.
You think Oliveira is the favorite compared to over Felder?
I don't know if he'll be the favorite, but I like Oliveira in that fight.
Oh, okay.
I think Oliveira's striking has really improved. I mean, he probably should be fighting at 145.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he tries, he can make 145. But because he's a smaller lightweight, but doesn't have to cut as much weight, I feel like he really excels at lightweight also. Like, I think that if he's got the right opponent, and I don't think Felder's a particularly big lightweight,
yeah,
that it could go his way. I mean, Oliveira's just such a dangerous guy.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Like, sometimes it's better to go up. Like, look at Robert Whittaker.
Mm-hmm, right.
Semi-successful at 170, ultra-successful at middleweight.
Right. And I think Gastelum is going to be the same, ultimately.
Yeah, Gastelum as well. Yeah, he's super successful at 185. You know, he's doing great.
Was successful at 170, except he wasn't successful at making weight.
That's the problem.
Sure. Yeah. I want to ask you about Ben Askren. How familiar are you with Ben Askren? Have you watched a lot of his fights outside of the UFC?
Not a lot of them, but I've seen him fight, yeah.
So he had his retirement fight on Friday. Yeah. Destroyed.
I've rolled with Ben Askren once.
Oh, wow. That must be... it's like swimming
probably
with sharks.
Probably like the strongest men I've ever grappled with. Like, obviously, they're bigger than me, so they didn't go full power. But you can feel the potential of power when you're wrestling or rolling with somebody, even though they're bigger. John Jones, number one, strongest ever.
You've rolled with John Jones before?
I wouldn't call it rolling. I'd call it like more like flowing, just for fun, like laughing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
He's such a nice guy. He's so much bigger than me. Like, you know, and he's also that like, you know, like big brother type, like mess with you a little bit, you know, because I'm a smaller guy than him. And he's so sweet, such a nice person. And like, we've like flow rolled a little bit, nothing serious, but like I can feel the potential of power. Like if he wanted to rip my arm off or rip my head off, as high a chance as he could, you know?
All this John Jones stuff kills me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I've met
Jones
on so many occasions. He's the sweetest guy. He really is a nice guy.
Honestly, man, heart of gold, the guy.
But who knows what's going on with him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But then, like, the second strongest, George St. Pierre. And then very close to George St. Pierre's power. Because George, I've rolled, like, not that I've rolled a lot with George, so sometimes he'll, like, show me some real power. Like, he'll explode, you know, or something. Or, like just messing with me. You know, obviously, we're not the same size. But then very close to George is Ben Askren. Like, me and Ben Askren, we rolled, like, for, like, 1 5-minute round, very friendly. You know, he was super nice to me. He wasn't trying to beat me. I wasn't trying to beat him or anything like that. But I can feel how strong he was. He's up there with GSP strength.
Yeah. I wish he would have ended up in the UFC, but I know the stars.
Man, they should
the
do it, man. They should just do it, even if it's a one-off.
He says he wants to fight George. He says the only way I'd come out of retirement is to fight George. I want $2 million, and I want to fight George.
That would sell. $2 million
I would love
cheap,
to watch
man.
That fight.
$2 million is cheap for Ben Askren.
Yeah.
Look at his record. Look who he's beaten. Look how he's done it, man. Like, that's an incredible fight. Like, I would love to watch that. Yeah. Even if I was there.
I mean, you'd
man.
Have to really explain to people who Ben Askren is, though. Like, I mean, he's not a guy that... Man, the guy GSP's sitting on his couch that's more solid than UFC.
UFC's a promoting machine. They can make a highlight reel.
Yeah.
They'd have to buy the rights, though, for the footage.
From one championship. One
that won't be cheap, probably.
Probably not.
But there's a lot of highlights in there. He's got an incredible fighting system, you know, like he barely ever gets hit, barely ever gets hurt. Some of his fights are boring, you know, like obviously even he knows, but there's no risk in his fights.
I wrote this on Friday when Ben fought, and people, you know, some people that are MMA writers disagreed with me. I said, you know, I can't fault Ben for doing what he did. He didn't get an offer from the UFC. He got big money to fight elsewhere. He's got basically a stake in the company of ONE FC. He's on their board of directors now.
Wow, that's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah, he's won 2 Lamborghinis from fighting there. And he was able to just destroy guys. Like, the competition weren't on par with him, but he didn't get it, take any damage. He fought there for a couple years, made a ton of money. And now he's retired. Like, we should be applauding that. We shouldn't be saying, oh, the guy should have fought the best guys in the world.
It was outside of his hands, too.
It was outside of his hands.
Yeah, and, like, it's hard to say that none of the guys he fought were good. Maybe he just didn't make them look good.
In ONE FC, they weren't. No, in ONE FC,
I didn't watch all his
he
opponents.
He didn't fight anybody that was considered a top 20 guy in the world.
No? Well, why?
Because they're just not there.
No, he didn't fight any ex-UFC guys who went over?
No.
Oh, that sucks. I thought maybe
he fought guys in Bellator. Like, he fought Jay Heron in Bellator. That was the only round he lost.
Yeah, but Jay Heron was done by then, no?
Like, no, Jay Heron was still okay.
He was still okay then.
It was a while ago.
Oh, okay.
And he fought in Bellator. He destroyed Koroshkov, who's I think is a top 20 welterweight in the world.
Yeah. But man, like, the UFC never really offered him a contract, right?
Yeah. Well, the UFC said we're not interested. And not only that, they negotiated.
From how many years ago? Like, from Bellator, they told him that.
Yeah, after Bellator. He left Bellator because he wanted to go to the UFC, and they said they weren't interested. So he went over to ONE and made a boatload of cash. But
man,
I don't know. I think Ben Askren is like a top three welterweight in the world just from what I've seen, just because his wrestling is so dominant and he's adapted it to MMA and his style. Yeah. So like he can just get guys down.
But like, how many guys do you think in the top 10 you think he would beat?
Probably
everybody.
I think
he has a chance to beat everybody.
He wouldn't fight Woodley. They train together.
No. But I'm not saying like, does he have the potential to beat everybody in the top 10? I think so.
Yeah.
I think
he has
a chance.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
I'm not saying he would for sure.
Of course.
But I'm saying definitely has a chance. You know, it would have been incredible to see. And
yeah.
I still think there's a chance like for him to, if they give him like a one-off against somebody great, you know.
But I don't think that we should undermine his career because of that. Like, I think I think we should be applauding the guy. I mean, he did it. He made it.
He did one of the more logical moves and not emotional moves.
Well, someone said to me, oh, he should have taken less money to fight in the UFC. And I said to them, I go, would you rather host a news broadcast? Like, let's say you're an anchor. Let's say you're Dan Rather or something.
Yeah.
Would you rather get paid $250,000 a year to host a newscast that nobody watched and you had more free time on your hands? Or would you rather host like the biggest news broadcast in the world and get 60 grand and work your tail off, but people know who you are? You're the guy.
That's hard to say.
There's no wrong answer.
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's no wrong answer. But the thing is, it's not like nobody's watching ONE FC. Asia is watching ONE FC.
That's true.
Like, they have big numbers in Asia, no?
Yeah, big numbers in Asia.
So he's a hero over there. It's just not a North American hero. There's nothing wrong with that. That's pretty great, too.
And the competition. But, you know, some people might want that acceptance from a worldwide crowd, you know, like a worldwide acceptance. Right.
Yeah, worldwide acceptance is great, and that's why people saw a lot of guys fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I fight in the UFC is for USADA, because of the testing.
Clean.
You know, it just makes it safer. Like fighting a guy and you know for sure he's on steroids and there's no cap on how much he can take and what he can be on and what he's doing. You know, it's scary because we're already putting our health on the line already, because we're already taking knees and elbows to the face and stuff like that. You know, and just to be fighting a guy who's more like, got more testosterone, more juice, and he can take more damage and has on painkillers, he's on all kinds of things. You know, it just makes it that much harder and that much less of an advantage for you, you know, more of a disadvantage for me. So, like, I'd rather fight in UFC because of the USADA, and I'm really happy. Like, the fighters who complain about USADA, I don't understand them. I don't understand them. Like, I think it's what sets UFC apart from everybody and shows how UFC is, you know, ahead of the game in that sense.
Yeah,
because
it's true competitive spirit.
Yeah, it's true competitive spirit. It protects us as fighters and our health. Like, when I retire, I'm most likely going to retire healthier because I fought in the UFC, because the guys are less juiced.
Yeah.
Less on the sauce, or less chance of them being on the sauce. You know?
Whenever I talk to Misha Cirkunov, he says the exact same thing. He says he loves USADA, loves fighting in the UFC because of that, and that was a big contributing factor. He got big offers to fight in Russia and overseas when he was a free agent in ECB. But just, you know, having USADA there at part of the UFC, that's why he fights in the UFC.
If I ever had a chance to see Dana and talk to him about it, I'd just tell him, first off, thank you for USADA.
Mm-hmm.
USADA was the best move. Like, for me as a fighter who's never cheated, never done any of those things, it's the best thing, and thank you.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best.
Another guy I want to talk about, of course, is GSP. We haven't spoken that much about him. Patrick Cote, he was on the MMA Hour. Said he's not sure GSP will ever fight again. Doesn't expect him to defend the middleweight strap. Do you have any inside information for me? Any inside knowledge of what's going on in the head of Georges St. Pierre, the brain of GSP, the mind of GSP, as the TSN documentary called it?
Man, it's not easy to know what GSP's thinking, because I can't imagine the life he's lived, you know, and everything he's accomplished and how he's accomplished it and where he's at in the state right now. You know, he's probably on vacation chilling. And he's just enjoying his victory. But if he still has that hunger, like, well, the reason why he came back was that after 4 years, he realized he can't go on without doing one more. He doesn't want to be 60 years old or 70 years old and thinking, oh, I had one more fight in me. And he took 4 years off, and then he realized, man, I got to get back in there. I can do it. I have another one in me for sure. Maybe two, you know, maybe three. I don't know. I don't know what number he has in his head. So I think it's going to take, like, you know, a little bit of time for him to let this fight pass him over, soak in, and enjoy his time. And when he gets back into training full time again, because now he's training a little bit, you know, obviously, but not training like he is when he's training for a fight. And then when he does that training, he'll know himself the feeling of whether or not he feels like going through the stress. Because, like, I feel stressed when I go for a fight, but I've never been, you know, two-time world champion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you told me he had a lot of fun. And it looked like it was that the great thing about that fight to me as a fan was it looked like a different George St. Pierre. Like
he had so many more tools. Before stepping away for his break, the last three fights, you can tell how fed up he was of a lot of this stuff. Like, not the fighting, you know, but like going through the motions, like, okay, he's gonna do this diet, he's gotta, you know, answer these questions and answer the same question six times a day from six different reporters asking the same thing. Like, it became mundane for him, you know. And then after the 4 years off, he wanted it all back. And like, I felt like this time around, when he was being interviewed, he was a lot better in his skin, and he felt like things were much easier for him.
At times, he had his moments.
He had his moments where he was annoyed, but I think that's more from like the stress than being annoyed by the questions, mm-hmm. you know, and just like, you know, being uneasy, everyone telling him how he's gonna lose this fight. You know?
I thought George was starting to really have fun in the days leading up, where they did the side-by-side interviews with him and Bisping, and he said, I'm going to stand like an anchor in the middle of the cage, and I'm going to stand and trade with Michael Bisping.
Yeah, or when at the weigh-ins, he was waving him off, and he was making jokes, and he was loving it. And then, you know, I feel like he enjoyed this one, mm-hmm. and that's what he was looking for. Like, after when he stepped away, he was wondering whether or not he would enjoy it, and he loved it.
Yeah, and he had such a big smile on his face afterwards as he was entering the ambulance. He had this big smile on his face. Yeah. You could tell he was yelling at Dana White. I was back there.
Oh, yeah?
But he was yelling at Dana White. He's like, I'm the champion again. I feel so great. He was talking to Dana. You could tell he felt great. And then, of course, he climbs into an ambulance and goes to the hospital. But it is what it is.
I tell my wife all the time, the happiest moment in my life was when I won my first UFC fight, got my hand raised.
Yeah.
Imagine being on GSP's level, man.
I've noticed you said that when your wife left the room.
Yeah. She's heard it a million times. Wedding, no wedding, whatever. That's number one for now. I worked at it for a long time, and I was happy to get it, you know?
Do you think the second win will mean as much?
Yeah, it'll definitely mean even more, because I've never lost before.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, in MMA, I've lost in grappling tournaments, wrestling tournaments, things like that, but I never lost in MMA. And like, I know people thought I was motivated before, but wait till you see me get ready for this one. This one's gonna be great.
Yeah, I can imagine. Again, you were winning that fight. Like, you had that fight. You were what, 2 minutes away, 1 minute away,
3 minutes away,
3 minutes away. Yeah.
But you know, it's something that happens. And like,
You learn from it, I guess.
I refuse to call it a fluke, and I don't want anybody to call it a fluke. You know, like I said, I said it before. Like, I haven't really done a lot of interviews, but I talked to my friends and family about it, and like, half the decision was him deciding to throw that elbow at that time, and the other half was me staying in the pocket to go for the finish, you know. And we both made decisions, and you know, he got the knockout. So like, I don't want to call it a fluke or anything like that. And my hat's off to Ricardo; he won that fight.
Misha Tate, she says Holly Holm has the best chance of beating Cyborg. Agree or disagree? Of all the women in MMA today,
all the women.
See if you're on the same page as me.
The thing is, like, she has great boxing, striking experience, kickboxing, you know, like that's Cyborg's strength, you know. But Cyborg's also an incredible grappler, and we know that Holly Holm doesn't have the best jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't know if it's improved over like the years or not, you know, like, but I mean, like, compared to Cyborg, who's been a black belt for a while now, and Misha Tate stubbed her with like a rear naked choke in the last round or fourth
with
round,
Holly, yeah,
with
the
Holly,
fifth round,
last round, right? And who knows, maybe Cyborg's game plan is not to kickbox this time around and take her down and sub her. But if Cyborg decides to keep it standing, yes, Holly Holm has the best chance.
You think so, really?
Yeah. But who else do you think has
a better
chance?
I think Nunes has a better chance. I think if Nunes stepped in there,
I didn't even think of it.
That's the fight I thought they were
going to
make.
They're not in the same weight class.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
Nobody's in the same weight class as Cyborg.
Definitely Nunes.
Other than...
You know what? You're right. Definitely Nunes. Nunes is an incredible boxer, incredible wrestler. But the thing is, Nunes gasses, man.
Compared to Holly,
she gets more tired than Holly would.
Although she went 5 with Shevchenko.
Yeah,
and looked fresh at the end of the fifth.
That's true. And actually, she did say before the fight when she pulled out, she's fought with that problem, that nasal problem before. And that's maybe why she got tired in some of her earlier fights.
Yeah.
You know, like, if that problem's taken care of, maybe she doesn't actually have a stamina issue. Maybe it was actually that.
And you also, like you mentioned with Alex Garcia, you train differently, you do stamina training, you get better. I mean, she's got to train for 5 rounds now.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe she's doing something different.
I thought her fight against Shevchenko was masterful. Like, a lot of people thought Shevchenko won that fight. I thought Nunes won 4 of the rounds. Like, I thought her strategy was
very
good.
Close fight.
It was a close fight.
When they come like that, like, even, like, say, we compare, like, that fight like, I don't know. I don't want to compare it to Dominic Cruz versus TJ Dillashaw, but like,
it's similar.
I wasn't so disappointed that Cruz got the decision, even though I thought TJ won.
Yeah.
But like, you could give it to Cruz too. And like, you could give it to Shevchenko as well. Yeah. But like, you know, I thought Amanda won. But
yeah, me too.
You know, like, it's not like I wasn't shocked either.
I thought the strategy she employed against Shevchenko was perfect. It was the perfect strategy to offset her strengths. But I mean, at the same time, it still ended up being a close fight.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to touch on is Colby Covington. You know, as someone in the UFC, what do you think? I mean, Tyron Woodley said he was the disgrace to the welterweight division. What do you think of this kind of new era of guys, you know, using their platform for self-promotion? And, I mean, Colby's managed to get to the top three in the division as a result.
Yeah, well, I can't judge anybody. You know, everyone's going to do what they do, you know. And if that's the route he wants to take and that's who he wants to be, that's fine. You know what I mean? Everyone's, you know, free speech. You can say whatever you want. You can have your own opinion. You know, you can... I don't know if he's racist or not, but, you know, like, calling out the Brazilians, you know, like, he also said that he didn't get treated well, he got spit on and all those things, you know, and it's from his perspective, that's what he says. Like, I don't condone any of that stuff. I wouldn't say any of that things about Brazilians. Like, I've been to Brazil, I spent 4 weeks there, you know, I had a great time, and I didn't get, you know, like, disrespected because I wasn't Brazilian.
Were you fighting there, or were you just...
I was there to corner someone, Yves Jabouin, he fought that night. Okay. He fought there, and the first time they went back to the UFC in a long time, I think it was like 14 years, they hadn't been there in a while. And I went there for like, for his fight, then I stayed for like a month just to experience
cool.
Brazil. And it's a wonderful place, and the people there,
they're
great.
They're not filthy animals.
I don't think, you know, I didn't meet any filthy animals, really, you know. And like, I have some friends out there, and my friend Gustavo Shimu, he was out there, and he showed me around. We went to the favelas, you know, we did a boxing class in there, and like, I didn't have any problems with anybody, you know, but that's my experience. Maybe Colby had a terrible experience, and they didn't treat him well, and he felt like that's what he had to say. I don't know, like, it's hard to know. I just wouldn't say any of that stuff, and that's not my style. You know, I'm more like George in that sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's more like...
I think most tri-star athletes are.
Most tri-star athletes are. But
I mean, Elias can talk some trash on Twitter every now and then.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Kobe's going to say what he wants, man. It's just not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not for me, but...
So you're not going to start calling out everybody in the bantamweight division?
No, I just lost.
You want to cut a promo on John Lineker?
No, not at all. But, you know, when I win fights, like, if that's what, like, I was thinking of, like, actually talking to Sean Shelby, like, I wanted to do it, like, if I won the fight, you know, obviously, and see with him, like, what does he want from me? Like, me, I'm a proactive guy, you know, I want to know, like, what I'm allowed to do, like, I don't want to disrespect Sean Shelby. Like, it's not the fighters that I'm worried about, you know, it's more like Sean Shelby and the UFC and how they run things. Like, I don't want to put pressure on Shelby, and he tells me, he's like, listen, man, can you shut up and you stop talking about this? I'm not putting this fight together. You know, you know, like, not that I don't want to rustle his feathers too much either, but, like, what's the point of making him upset? You know, he's got a job to do. He's got 500, I don't know how many fighters are on the roster, but close to 500 fighters.
At the same time, I think the post-fight call-out is beneficial if you see that you have a good stylistic matchup against somebody in your division. Like, if you see somebody at 135 that you think, you know, this guy's good, but my strengths offset his strengths, it might be wise to call him out because then Sean Shelby will say, oh, okay, well, that's an interesting matchup.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how far I can go with it.
Yeah,
you know, I would like to talk to him and see how deep I can, how hard should I call somebody? You know, I don't know what he wants. One thing I was actually thinking of telling him after the fight, if I would have won, and I probably would have been able to have a conversation with him if I won, was I got a great idea for an app for the UFC. You know, help his matchmaking job, make it a lot easier. You make an app, you put all the fighters on the roster. We all have access to our weight class, and you check off who you're willing to fight. And the month and, you know, fight events you were willing
to
fight
those
guys.
It's like Tinder for UFC
fighters. You match yourself. Yeah. You know, like, so let's say, like, I'll match myself with, you know, like 25 guys.
Yeah. You swipe right.
He doesn't have to.
If they swipe right on you, you've got a match.
Yeah, he doesn't have to ask me. You know what I mean? He doesn't have to call me and ask me. Pick one of those 25 guys in one of these dates I'm willing to fight. Boom. You know I'm going to say yeah.
I guess those dating apps are matchmaking apps.
They're matchmaking apps, you know? I want trademark copyright on those apps, UFC, if you're listening.
That's a good idea. I like it.
You know, just make his job easier.
Or even if it's five guys, and that way they can really narrow it down. And then if one other guy picks you,
but like
he
lets us pick as many as we want. Like some guys for sure are gonna pick everybody.
Or even if you can rank them, like who?
Yeah, prioritize them. Yeah, exactly. And for what time? You know, because like the last fight, like I won February 19th, and then I thought, you know, we had like spoken softly about like when would you like to fight again? You know, nothing confirmed or anything like that. So I was like, oh, he told me maybe July and then September or July, December, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
and this is before cards were chosen, you know.
Right.
So I said, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So I was expecting to fight two more times this year, you know, and fight in the summer and then fight one time in the winter. But I haven't heard. I just heard that, like, we'll call you soon. We'll call you soon. We'll call you soon.
Right.
We'll call you soon.
Yeah.
We'll call you soon. And then I got New York, which was great in the sense that I didn't have to ask to be on one of the biggest cards of the year, probably the biggest card or second biggest card of the year. But that was great. So he made up for the 8 months that I didn't fight. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's great in that sense. Like if you haven't heard from him in a while, he's probably going to make it up to you in some way.
That's
you know,
good.
He's good at his job. So, but I just want to know like how I can call guys and not upset him. Not worried about the fighters. You know?
I like that app idea. That's smart.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep you that much longer, but one thing I did want to ask you about is the ranking system in the UFC. I always bring this up because I think it's the most flawed system in the world.
I have no idea how it works.
Okay, so let me explain to you how it works. So they've got, I think it's about 10 to 15 different journalists of the sport. And these aren't like the Ariel Helwanis of the world or the John Morgans. It's people that work in like local, like there's a guy from San Diego who's one of the guys.
Okay.
And they rank the fighters. And every week they get a ballot and they rank their 1 through 15. But you know,
so it's these guys' opinion. It's 15 guys.
Yeah, it's 15 guys' opinion, and that does the whole do the rankings, and it's open, so you can see who people are voting for.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was like merit. I thought it was like you beat somebody. Let's say I'm number 15. I beat number 13. Yeah. I'm 13.
Well, here's the problem also that I have with the rankings. It's what James Vick has brought up to me when I talked to him is ranked guys don't want to fight unranked guys because you have nowhere to go but down.
Yeah.
So
well, not true.
Guys, and Joe Duffy's an example.
I'll give you a perfect example. My boy he fought someone who was ranked number 15 and he wasn't even ranked. He was on the Ultimate Fighter. And I don't name names, you know what I mean? And he won. He beat the number one. I think it was either the guy was number ranked 15 or number 40. I'm not sure. One of those rankings, and he wasn't ranked. He beats him and he didn't get into the rankings. You know what I mean? And then his next fight wasn't against a ranked guy either.
Yeah.
So like I thought that was weird because that guy kept his ranking even though he lost to someone who was outside of the ranking system. So I don't see it as you lose your ranking, right?
Yeah.
There's precedent to not losing your ranking if you lost to a guy outside of the ranking.
Yeah, it's strange to me. The way that the whole thing is done is weird because you're going to get guys that are ranked that are fighting guys that aren't ranked are avoiding guys that aren't ranked, but the people that are doing the rankings don't know that. So how are they going to know who to move up?
Yeah. How does the ranking system work in boxing? How do they choose who's what number?
I don't know. There's a million boxing organizations. I can't keep up with
them. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe the system is flawed. Every system would be flawed, here's the other problem, though. Yeah.
You and I, we have a good rapport. Like, I know you well.
Yeah.
If I'm voting, and let's say you just had a big win over somebody who's ranked 15.
Yeah.
I might want to put you in the rankings because we know each other.
Yeah, but that's biased.
And it's open rankings, right? But if you let's say we have a good relationship, you see my rankings, and you send me a message saying, "What's going on, man? Why wouldn't you rank me 15? I just beat the guy who's 14 in the world."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That puts me as a journalist in a bad spot.
Yeah, but that's human nature, though.
But it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, but there's conflict of interest everywhere.
Yeah,
you can't avoid these guys. There's no way of coming up with a system.
There's a guy from Brazil who does the rankings. You notice these Brazil? There's like he has Adriano Martins ranked. He just got let go from the organization. He's still under. Like he still has him ranked top 15.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's not in the organization anymore. You don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, but I wasn't worried anyway.
But you know what I mean?
But
like,
I mean, like, yeah,
what if Adriano's his friend?
Yeah, that's
and he doesn't want to upset his friend.
Yeah, or you.
So having an open ranking system is biased.
Yeah, but like there's favoritism in any part of life in any situation. So even if we change the ranking system, the new ranking system is gonna have some favoritism as well for sure. Is there a perfect ranking system? I have no idea, but I would definitely like it to be more merit based, you know, and see how that goes. But like, man, they should be open about making the ranking system and changing the rules.
Yeah, why can't they have like they should just hire someone to do them.
Yeah, I don't.
Don't tell them who it is. Just have a guy, have a consultant, have like some sort of consulting firm do it.
Yeah, this should definitely do with how many wins you have in the UFC and who you've beaten and stuff like that. That's for sure. It should be definitely based on merit somehow.
Yeah, well, here's another argument for it. Like James Vick was, I guess he was 7-1 and he wasn't getting ranked.
8-1 now, right?
Yeah, 8-1 and he wasn't getting ranked. Even after that win with Duffy, he wasn't getting ranked.
He's still not
ranked.
And
then you've got Michael Johnson, who was 1-4 in his last five, but he's losing to ranked guys, so he's not moving. You know, they're not moving far. He beat Dustin Poirier,
which is weird.
A highly ranked guy, so they don't want to move him too far down. But it's still 1-4 in the last five.
Another one of my friends was a ranked guy, and he was in the top 10, and he lost two times to the number one contender, right? Two fights in a row, he lost to the number one contender. So then they gave him his third fight, which was against number 9 or number 8, either number 9 or number 8. And then he lost a razor close split decision, like super close, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they fired him.
Yeah. Oh, they fired him.
Yeah. You know, so like he went from being ranked 6, losing two times, or I'm not sure what rank, but he's like in the top 10, you know, less than 9, but not top 5. And he fought the number one guy twice, not the same guy, but two times number one contender, two different guys who were number one contender. Lost to them both.
I think I know who it is, but whatever.
Both of the guys he lost to.
Yeah.
He could have won those fights as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? He lost like a tough decision.
Is this individual from France?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Francis.
No, it wasn't Francis. Yeah. No, it was even more recent than that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And Jesse Ronson got let go. He lost three in a row, but they were all splits. So he lost like a split decision to Kevin Lee.
Kevin
Lee's amazing, right?
Maybe didn't know he was amazing then, but he's very good.
Yeah.
He's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Well, I want to thank you for joining me here.
Oh, my pleasure. I had a great time. Aaron, always a pleasure to talk to you.
I'd like to thank your wife, Silva, hanging out here, listening to us talk about fighting.
Very patient.
I don't know how big of a fight fan she is. I know my wife has never watched a full fight in her life. So
she's seen every single one of my fights from when I was 15 years old, even my amateur career.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's been to all of them.
Yeah, my wife would not be able to sit here for this amount of time. So kudos to you. And thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. Thank you for spending your time in the city with me.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And also check out later on in the week, UFC 218. I'll be going to Media Day, chatting with a lot of the different individuals that are going to be on the card. So I'm going to put together an additional podcast with some of those interviews. Thanks again for tuning in, and thanks again to Ayman Zahabi for joining me in studio.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.